Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Welcome to the Progressive Britain podcast. This is the podcast that believes that progressive politics can change the world. In the dying hours of Wednesday evening, the EU27 agreed to a six-month flexible extension. And for the staffers working behind the scenes in Westminster, that means six more months of microwave meals, ghosting loved ones, and dreams about John Bercow's dulcet tones. Don't look at me like that, because I know we've all had them. After speaking to journalists earlier this week about what it was like to work behind the scenes in Westminster, today I, Stefan Rolnick, filling in for the lovely Hannah Shah, will be talking to three staffers of Labour parliamentarians who, and you can't see their faces, listener, but are clearly ecstatic with the whole situation currently. We've got Holly Higgins, who works with Alison McGovern. Hi, Holly.
Hello.
We have Jamie Alley, who works with Dr. Paul Williams.
Hello.
And we also have Zoe Shippen, who works with Phil Wilson.
Hello.
Good to have you all. How are we all doing?
Good. Very honoured to be on the Progress podcast.
Of course.
Thank you for having us.
No worries at all. So, Holly, kick us off. Obviously, everything is a complete mess at the moment. Is this where you thought you would be when you applied for the job?
So, in a sense, yes. I'm still fairly new to the job. So I've been here maybe about 5 or 6 months now. So I came in...
Right in the midst of the chaos.
In the midst of things, being a bit of a baptism of fire. So yeah, in a sense, although when I think back to my first few weeks in the job, when we had big Brexit votes, and for the life of me, I can't remember what we were voting on at that time, but I kind of thought those were the big moments. And I was, you know, like, oh, this is a one-time thing. I've got to really focus this week. And looking back at those few weeks now, I realize how naive that was. And actually, there's many big weeks and many big votes. And, you know, as of last night, when I woke up this morning, another 6 months to go. So, and possibly more, who knows? So yeah, it's very much...
Can just hear
Brexit
the,
life.
Hear the enthusiasm coursing through your
yes.
veins.
It's very fun.
So Jamie, there's a lot of political nerds who listen to this podcast, myself included.
Hi, political nerds.
And a lot of them who've watched The West Wing might romanticise a vision of working in Parliament as striding through the corridors of power, talking as you walk, handing over documents as you fly by someone. Does it feel inspirational and kind of hopey changey like West Wing, or does very quickly the shine come off it?
I wish it felt a bit hopey changey. So it's something that you get asked quite a lot when people ask you about work, I think. I went to the dentist last week and she asked me, oh, so what do you do? What's your trade? And I went, oh, I work in Parliament. And she went, oh, is it really glamorous? And I was like, no, it's absolutely not.
Does the news
not.
Look glamorous?
I was like, absolutely not. It's chaos and it's a mess. So yeah, no, it's not.
And did you expect that when you applied? I mean, what possessed you to...
Oh, I mean, like, yeah, I absolutely expected it to be a complete mess. Brexit is a complete mess. And yeah, we sort of have to keep the wheels turning as best we can, which has proven very difficult at times.
And also hope that the building doesn't fall down. I mean, I love old buildings and I love the kind of in the lobbies, all the old paintings and the gold and the silver, and it's all very shiny. And then you realise that there are mice everywhere. The building's falling down. I think they've just about cleaned the face of Big Ben, but we had Commons shut last week because of the flooding in the Commons. So that was a close one. I mean, but yeah.
You couldn't even write that. Like,
no, it's like, just, it's really strange.
It's just an ongoing metaphor for the Brexit situation.
I mean, So that's a really interesting point, right? Because you're walking through this historic building, even if it is falling apart. Is that something you ever get used to? That must be something that people ask you all the time, you know, like, is this something, eventually, does it just become normal that you're walking past portraits?
I mean, our office is based in the palace, so, and it's right underneath Big Ben, so you've got that glorious view of the Thames. And sometimes you do, I mean, I remember being a 16-year-old, standing opposite, like, on the other side of the Thames, looking at Parliament, thinking, God, imagine if you worked there. And now I do. And sometimes I sit at my desk and I think, God, how did you end up here in the middle of all of this mess?
Also, why did you end up here? Maybe,
exactly. As well? It was cool, though.
We were talking about political TV shows. And again, for the political TV nerds out there, if it isn't quite The West Wing, how close is it to the thick of it then? I mean, what is it like working in a high-pressure environment like this one?
God, there is just too much swearing, isn't there? I think everyone has to agree. I mean, I don't think...
In the thick of it or politics?
Both. I mean, it's how you get through, isn't it? It's a lot of gallows humour. To be honest, I think if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
Yeah, especially
particularly nowadays.
Yeah.
You have to see the humour in it. And yeah, The buildings falling down, all of that. I mean, the headlines just write themselves. And I personally find all that stuff very amusing. So,
well, speaking of things falling apart, I guess we better come on to the news at hand at the moment. We can only avoid it for so long. So obviously we mentioned earlier that an extension was agreed late on Wednesday evening. They've agreed a 6-month flexible extension, which I'm refusing to call a flex extension.
That's what it's known as, though.
Nope, I refuse. And that's depending on whether we can pass a deal, which I guess is a massive if. As a wise person once said, politics is just maths, counting the votes. So Holly, what do these latest development mean for our attempts to get a public vote? Is it more likely, less likely? Should we be hopeful? Should we despair? I mean, that seems to be the baseline at the moment, but is there a kind of room for hope in this?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that there is room for a lot of hope, actually. And I think that saying that politics is just maths, politics is so much more than that and means a lot to people. I mean, politics really does affect jobs and people's lives. And I think that's what's motivating us all at the moment to campaign for that public vote. But then you've got to win the votes in the Commons. And so when you're focused on that, it does become about maths, very simply, who has more votes and how can we get the votes that we need? I think something that I've been really struck by in the discussions about a public vote in Parliament is just how many MPs are really on a journey with Brexit. People are really trying to represent their constituencies the best that they can and do absolutely what's right for their constituents and for the country. Yeah, and I think more and more people are coming to the view that actually we're so far away now from where we were in the referendum in 2016, the things that were promised, how we thought Brexit might look, that actually whatever is agreed, whatever that might be, should be made legitimate by going back to the country. And, you know, we've had more Tory MPs come on board this week. Hugh Merriman spoke out earlier this week about backing a public vote. Yeah, and spoke at the rally, which was a really great moment. I don't know if people heard Betty Boothroyd's speech, but that was really wonderful. So I think her speech was full of hope at the rally. And I think that, yeah, I think there's lots of hope. It's just getting forward for the next 6 months.
And you described it as a journey. And Zoe, I just want to ask you, because one of the people who is kind of trying to help people on that journey is Phil Wilson, who is pushing
the Beckett Kyle Wilson
amendment. I really hope they don't add another name to that, otherwise I will struggle to remember that. But what's it been like working on that? Because obviously suddenly it seems like such a genius way to break the deadlock. I mean, for people who don't know, the amendment is that they would back Theresa May's deal on the condition that she then puts
it back
to
the people. Exactly.
And
so
yeah, so tell me, what's it been like taking people on that journey?
As you say, it's been a journey. It's been the most incredible experience to kind of watch the way that Peter and Phil are having these conversations and building these coalitions and reaching across the House and trying to find a way that we can break this kind of Brexit impasse, because we just can't go on like this. We cannot go from month to month with businesses not knowing where they're going, with constituents not knowing whether or not they can stay in the country or not. We have to reach a deal at some point. And whether it's Canada plus, whether it's Norway plus, whether it's EEA, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, it has to go back to the people, because we have to compare what they were promised in 2016 with what we have now.
And I mean, a lot of that campaigning involves, you know, people externally trying to put, you know, tell their members of parliament what they want and kind of put pressure through those means of democracy. Jamie, have you been feeling that pressure as the news has kind of ebbed and flowed and gone up and down? Like, is it palpable in parliament, the pressure coming from outside?
Yeah, I think both of the parties are very divided on this issue at the minute. And I think, I don't know about the Conservative side, but I think when you speak to Labour MPs and their staffers, no matter where they sort of like sit on a public vote or Common Market 2.0 or whatever, they're all going through the division lobbies and they feel as though they're doing the right thing by their constituents. I know there's a lot of frustration between them all at the minute, and there's a lot of frustration among the public, from the public, but I feel that at least on our side of the divide, they all feel as if they're doing the right thing. That's what they're sent here to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, as we mentioned earlier, your Member of Parliament, Paul Williams, was a doctor before he was an MP.
He was.
Yeah, so what, yeah, I mean,
he still is. Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah,
okay.
He still is, yeah.
So has that given you a kind of, you know, as somebody on the front lines, I guess, a fresh perspective on how important this stuff is for the NHS? Is he kind of always going on about it in the office?
Well, I wouldn't say all the time. But I mean, like, you know, in the Brexit referendum, we all know about the big red bus. We know people voted to leave the EU because they were told that they'd get £350 million a week for the NHS. That's just not going to happen. There is no Brexit dividend, you know. The economy will be weaker if we leave the European Union. That is a fact. And that means less money for the NHS. And there's, you know, you speak to doctors, nurses. I know Paul is still in massive touch with the medical community. And there is just a culture now of, you know, there's 100,000 EU, I can't remember if it's staff or clinicians in the NHS, but there's 100,000 people from the EU who work in the NHS. And, you know, there's this culture of like people not having any certainty, having to apply for settled status, you know, not knowing whether they'll be as welcome as they are now.
I think that's a really interesting point when you talk about, you know, how we so emphatically lost the argument on that healthcare argument. And you mention the economy and you hear these kind of statistics about how our economy has already suffered and it still feels so distant. And I think the thing we're going to have to do, you know, if the argument comes around again, is try and make that argument in literal terms that, you know, it's already we've already taken a hit to our health service and our economy. So you're already probably waiting longer in lines for, you know, waiting lists to get a healthcare appointment. You know, you've probably got less money in the bank. That means less days on holiday.
I still don't think we've done enough to get, as Remain people, to get our head around the fact that despite all the warnings on the economy, on the health service, and the effect that it has already had, 17.5 million people still went out despite hearing all those warnings and voted to leave. They heard all those warnings and they went, yeah, but we think this is worth it.
But I think that we really have to understand and show that we understand that actually this stuff really affects people's lives. You know, you can't just say, you know, average families will lose this much money. People have been working and contributing to our economy from the European Union, people we really need in our NHS and in our social care system as well, which is really at breaking point. And those people, you know, don't know whether they can stay or not. I mean, what a message that we're sending when actually we really need those people in our labour market to do the jobs that are going to look after our older people and our children as well. And I just think that we really need to constantly have that at the front of our minds as campaigners, as people working in parliament, as people in politics, that actually this stuff really is meaningful to people's lives. It's not just about numbers on a leaflet.
Brexit is heart over head in terms of, you know, people losing their jobs and we get countless emails of people. I think there was part of the 38 Degrees email where it said that they didn't mind if they lost their jobs or if there was a hard border in Northern Ireland. And it's whether or not that is a decision that people can make for other people. And we're very, particularly in the Northeast, you'll have it in your constituency as well, Jamie, that we know what it's going to be like if Brexit goes through. I mean, her deal is, you know, the Prime Minister's deal was a lot better than a WTO deal, but it's still going to cost jobs. And I just think at the moment it's not tangible yet for people. And what happens when those jobs do go? So many of the issues are not actually about the EU. They're about where people's stake is in this country. You know, the insecure work, not being able to get a doctor's appointment and things like that. So leaving the EU is not actually going to particularly help them.
Coming back to the idea of hope, I think that it's really about trying to say in the best way possible and communicate to people across the country that actually we should have hope that our country, you know, can be more united, that people can have more power over their own lives. Personally, I think that's where politics needs to go from here.
I know Jess Phillips was on the show being interviewed by Anna McGovern a few weeks ago.
Good that we got some
And I think she summed it up for me in the sense that, like, the way the direction Remain has taken since June the 23rd, 2016 is that it's increasingly looking, you know, too posh, too London, and it's not speaking to the communities that voted Leave. And until, you know, we sort of like reach out and get beyond that Remain core vote, you know, we're going to end up back at square one.
That's a nice subtle plug here for the Carl Wilson compromise, which is Phil's constituency voted 60% Leave. It's in the northeast of England. Yeah. It's, you know, it's traditional coalfield communities. It's overwhelmingly white British. There's very little immigration. Peter Carl's constituency in Hove voted 70% Remain. They both face very, very different issues, but they both know that their constituents will be affected in very, very similar ways. And it's about trying to find a way in which we can all come to a point where we do the right thing for the country, which
and provide some legitimacy as
precisely.
Well, so that we have that process, so that people really do feel that they have a stake in what's going to happen. It just comes back to the fact that where we are now is so different to where we were
exactly
at the start of the campaign.
So these arguments are going to continue, and I'm sure the chaos and the busyness for you guys is going to continue long through the summer, given the extension, and obviously we've got the European elections probably coming up as well, unless we get a deal over the line before then. Could you kind of leave us with your, because you guys are feeling the pressure here, if anyone who's feeling the pressure at home, could we get your Brexit survival tips from the front line? How do you stay with it?
Sure. Well, actually, earlier this week, I just really wanted to do some baking. So I baked a cake and I baked some brownies, brought them into the office. That was fun. And yeah, so sometimes I'll do that in the evening. But also, I think it's just really important that people like switch off on the weekends. I mean, it's funny what you said at the beginning about ghosting loved ones, because I just find actually that when I'm running around here trying to get to different stuff, making sure we've got the information we need, I'm always on my phone, and there's a lot of WhatsApp groups has been covered by a lot of podcasts, and I know Brexit cast covered it loads about all the WhatsApp groups. So I tend to try to stay away from my phone at the weekend, but it's actually led to a couple of friends of mine, really great friends, getting in touch saying, because I've missed their messages, saying, Holly, what have I done? Have I done something? Do you hate me or something? And I've had to text them back and be like, oh, I'm so, so sorry. I just really turned my phone off. And I personally, if any of my friends are listening to this, they'll laugh because they know I'm awful at technology. I can't work my phone anyway. But I think it's really, really important to switch phone off, to not look at Twitter, especially as, you know, staff, you know, we're here to help our members, but we really need to switch off and not look at Twitter so much on the weekend. That's my personal tip.
It's a tough one to follow, Zoe.
I think there was a pub that I walked past where it said, talk Brexit, get barred. And I think that should probably be, I think particularly when you get outside of work, it's not uncommon for you to tell someone that you work in Parliament. And as you were saying earlier about the dentist, they go, oh, so what's it like? What do you think about Brexit? What's going to happen?
So
where do we go next?
About Brexit.
And you go, yay, let's talk about Brexit, or let's not. So
you sort of just have to say, it's just a mess.
I think we should all get badges that just say, yes, I work in Parliament. No, I don't want to talk about Brexit. Talk to me about anything else, but do not talk to me about Brexit.
Jamie, you know, meditation or yoga, or you could do what we do in the Progress office, which is make ourselves Pret A Manger shareholders with the amount that we spend there.
Not quite meditation or yoga. I think in our office, so like when the MPs leave on a Thursday afternoon, we tend to like slink out to like the Westminster Greggs and get like a big box of donuts and like take 10 minutes to be like,
that's a great strategy.
Right.
And now they are gone.
Let's calm down now.
When they built a Greggs there, why did they build a Greggs there? Like, it's like the greatest thing, but the worst thing ever.
I think that Greggs features in almost every Progress podcast.
As if what Westminster needs right now is a massive sugar crash. Already struggling to find
Brexit's made me put on weight, though.
I'm not sure you're the only one. Guys, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy days to come and speak to us. Good luck with the rest of it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Progressive Britain podcast. The music was One in the West by Blue Dot Sessions, licensed under Creative Commons, and many thanks to our fantastic and long-suffering producer, Caroline Crampton.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.